Song there, Mr. Alvin Lee issuing us in with those extremely prophetic lyrics. I think maybe, okay, Sam, patch him on in. Roger Sales with you, of course, here on the Sunday edition of the Radio Ranch RBN edition. It's the 31st, last day of July, which is very significant to me, by the way, and I'll tell you in a second. And we're on RBN, of course, Republic Broadcasting, and the room of the house that John built, the room that Ralph built, and here we stand. I've been with you a couple of months now, and some of you, most of you, I would think, I hope, maybe some new folks, are pretty familiar with what we do here. And so the first time when Tom D. tapped me to take this slot after Ralph's very untimely demise, I brought a guest on with me who's I call him my broadcast partner, really. And the reason I brought Brent Winters on, some of you heard that show, is because Brent actually had taken a couple of trips to Alaska and had met and knew briefly Ralph. And so I thought in that situation that was a real good move and bring Brent on since he'd personally met him. I'd never even spoken with Ralph. I was very familiar with his work. Tonight we're going to have an instant replay, and I've got Brent Winters coming back, and I think he just got on with us, but I want to give you some background here if you're new. Why? Is because Brent has more expertise than anybody I know in the country still living on the common law. Now, the important part of that is that when you, if you do, if you choose to, maybe you're on the fence, you might already done it. I don't know. I've never told anybody to do this and follow up on it. All I want to do is fulfill my obligation from the Old Testament watchman on the wall prophecy and let you know there's danger coming and there's an outlet. And once I've done that, I've relieved myself of any guilt. You don't do anything, blood's on your hands, I don't care whether you do it or not. I'd like to have you do it, obviously. I would strongly suggest, and if you got any questions, we'll bend over backwards to answer them for you. But in the end, everything's got to be voluntary. See, if it's not voluntary, it's tyranny. It's either one or the other. If they tell you what you are, it's open tyranny. That's why they've done it the way they have. So they get your consent out of ignorance and trick you into this little shooting match of being their slave and being the underpinnings of the entire system, by the way, in doing so. So that's your decision, not mine. Everything's got to be voluntary. But should you choose to do it, or if you've already done it, then what technically is happening here is you're choosing which system of laws you want to live under, and you're moving to the position that's been very skillfully hidden from all of us for many decades over into the original state citizenship. In that capacity, you have true God-given rights such as the people in the original first 90 years of our country had, and in doing so, you get constitutional protections. The only constitutional rights, the only rights that document gives you are civil rights under the 14th Amendment. So you, if you internalize these little kind of nuances like that, and you can hear all these broadcasters, all these politicians, all these other attorneys out there, the most skilled attorneys in our movement, constitutional rights. And I want to grab the computer screen and say, tell me what rights that document gives you. Okay? And so once you move over and file that and move over under God-given rights and constitutional protections, by the way, Brent, the only attorney I've heard say that is that gal Ellis that was one of Trump's attorneys that was homeschooled in Colorado, that's sharp as a tack. She said God-given rights and constitutional protections. I heard her recently talking about it. And that's totally accurate. Constitutional rights is totally inaccurate unless you want to have civil rights. Okay? So my feeling is that very few people, including myself, really understand the common law. And this guy here I've got on with me, my friend and broadcast partner, Brent Winters, is, as I said, as much of an expert as anybody I know of in the country. Okay, there may be some more skilled and knowledgeable, don't know of them. Okay, we got this one right here at hand, and he's a wonderful guy with an incredibly diverse and deep background. And so, Brent, I'm assuming you found a hot spot. You with us?
I'm with you, Roger, and I appreciate the kind words, of course, and it's better that other people blow my horn than me blowing my horn. The Bible says that, by the way, so I'm glad you're nice enough to do that, and I could say things about you that were, as they say in the Wabash Valley, similar. But let me ask you this as a matter of practicality and housekeeping. Is there going to be a break later on in this
show?
We've
got a traditional clock here. There's a break a couple of minutes at 20 after, one at the bottom of the hour, and they roll up till right before the top of the hour. Those are the three breaks.
Well, I might try to hook up to a better connection just in case. This one's working good, though.
Yeah, no, right, you sound good. You know, it's not full and up front, but it's certainly acceptable. So under circumstances, we were going through a rainstorm here when I walked in, and the electricity, mine had to go through reboots and stuff. So we're on a bubble gum and shoestrings today, but I think we can get through it.
Okay, well, however you want to proceed there, Roger, there are other lawyers that, of course, know a lot and a lot about what they've chosen to know about. And somehow I've gravitated toward learning more and more about less and less. And anybody that's worth his salt, no matter what he does in life, what his skills become, he will know if he's doing right, he'll know more and more about less and less. And as he knows more and more about less and less, as his focus becomes tighter and narrower, the more he will know about everything. I can say that on good authority from well-known other men who've experienced the same thing, some of them long gone, but also myself, I've experienced it. I would say this to anybody, let life guide you. Get moving, because if you get moving, God can guide you. But if you're sitting still, he can't guide you. The rudder doesn't do any good at all. But he'll move you into tighter and tighter and more focused understanding of smaller things. And that's the only way to understand everything, is to be focused on smaller things and understand entirely some little subject. Well, the little subject that I've been focused on for the last, a long time, decades now, is our common law. And my first question when I started was, what is it? Now, if you ask people today what our common law is, you'll get answers all over the lot. If you ask lawyers, they'll be just as bad. They don't know. It's court cases. That's what it is. It's this, it's that, it's the t'other. If you go to the encyclopedias, they'll have a list of about four or five things that possible definitions of our common law. Our common law has had different names through the centuries, originally or traditionally, and among the Germanic tribes, that's the Scandia tribes, the Scandinavian tribes, the Germanic tribes, and the Celtic tribes, which are fundamentally, as far as we can tell, the same people. You trace it back through Britain to the north of Europe, where those folk came from that populated Britain, and we discover that they called it, in the old Anglo-Germanic speech, the Volkreich. The Volkreich. Oh, what's the Volkreich? Well, the Volk, we still have that word in English, in our Anglo-Saxon. English is a Germanic tongue. We still have it, and it means the folk. We still say the folk with an F. You remember, of course, the last Volkswagen, the last bug in that form, rolled off the assembly line, I believe, Roger, in Argentina back in the year 2003. And they called it the Volkswagen. Well, Wagen is our word wagon. It means wagon. That's what it means. And the Volk means the folk, the wagon of the folk. Well, who are the folk? That is the people. Well, what's another word for the people? The Latins say militia. The folk are the militia. The more modern word is people. That is the militia. And the Volkreich is the militia's responsibility. That's what that means, Reicht. We still have that word too, Reicht, R-I-G-H-T. It's our responsibility. You remember, probably, those folk listening, they've heard of the Third Reich. Well, that was the Nazis ended up coining that, and that word Reich has to do with responsibility. You know, you were talking about a while ago, God-given rights. What are the God-given rights? Those are our responsibilities. The word has been hijacked. And it's been made out to mean something selfish. Well, these are my rights. Well, they are, but you're not fulfilling them, so shut your mouth. Your rights are your responsibilities. I have a right to remain silent. What does that mean? That means I have a responsibility, a duty, to put it in a shorter word. Duty only arises from law. Good. Go ahead, Roger.
Brent, I'm going to interrupt you because I want to insert something here. I was listening to Rents Friday night, and he had Edwin Vieira on, who I'm sure you're very familiar with, Harvard lawyer, PhD, all that. Mm-hmm. And he approached this. He said something. I never heard it put this way before, and it really resonated with me. He said, a right arises out of a duty.
Well, I would say it better. A right is a duty. I think he's fallen short. I know who Edward Vieira is. I've spoke to him. I've read his books. But he has, when he says that, I'm being picky about this, but I think it's important that we are picky. A duty arises out of law, and right is the old Germanic word that means duty. You know, you often hear it said, for instance, every right, I heard this when I was a boy, every right is accompanied by a corresponding duty.
That's what John taught us.
And that's what Edward Vieira is saying when he says that. And I say, no, it's more intense than that. A right, it's just another word for a duty, and a duty always arises out of law, a responsibility to do something, a duty to do something. Now, that doesn't mean you always do something. That means you might not do anything. In other words, you have responsibility for the government of your tongue. Those are constitutionally protected rights. That means duties. There are two sides of that coin. One's in the First Amendment, where there's a protection there, and the other one's in the Fifth. In the Fifth Amendment, you have the right, that is the duty, to shut your mouth and not talk, to remain silent when God wants you to. And that's your discernment to make, and I hope you make it right. Then the right, or the duty to speak when God wants you to, is the First Amendment. You have a duty. That's not an option. People think, oh, the Second Amendment protects my option to carry a weapon. No, no, no. That's a duty. You have a responsibility as a member of the militia men. That's what the people are. That's the Volk. That's the militia. The Volkreich. The people's duty. We the people of the United States. Those are all synonyms. You have a duty to have a weapon as a militiaman. It's not an option at common law. And our Constitution is a brief of common law government. Its phrases and terms are common law phrases. Does a woman have a duty to carry a gun? She may not. But the Constitution does not require her to carry a gun and to muster for militia duty. Should she? Well, in my humble judgment, yes, she should know how to use a weapon, because the Bible says she's the homekeeper. She's the homekeeper. She's the housekeeper. That word in the old Greek text of the Newer Testament means keeper of the home, protector, keep. In the sense of, again, the word, the old Anglo-Saxon, King James days. Keep means a castle in the noun sense, a fortress. And then to be a keeper means to protect your position, your duty, your scope of jurisdiction. And should a woman do that? Yes. A woman should do that, and she should be prepared to do that in the absence of a man. Protect her home, protect her family. But that doesn't mean she's a member of the militia. She's not. According to God, according to the Old Testament, according to the unambiguous statements of the law of God in the Old Testament and in the Newer Testament, and according to our common law, our Volkreich, our common law. It's been called many things, but here's the fundamental of our common law, Roger, if I may. Then I'll take a breather. Roger and I talk a lot on the radio, so I get a feel for whether he wants to say something. He probably has that feeling toward me, too. But our common law is, in a nutshell, the definition. It's not case law. It's not the opinions of the courts. It is due process. Our common law is not the what of law. It is the how we're going about doing things. It is the process, the course of our common law. As the Northwest Ordinance of 17 and 87 says, for the governance of the territories north and west of the Ohio, the right to trial by jury according to the course of our common law, and that's what our common law is, it's a course, it's a path you get on, according to its course, shall always be held viable. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the idea there. And that's important to note, because our common law, our Volkerrecht, our due process is only present in law of the land countries. There's another phrase, Roger, law of the land. What does that mean?
Right.
That's lifted from Magna Carta, Lex Terra, written, by the way, Magna Carta written in Latin so they could stick it in the Pope's face and all of the priesthood under him. Written in Latin, Lex Terra. And Stephen Langton, the foremost Old Testament commentator of his day, drafted Magna Carta, along with a few other fellows, Stephen DeBurr and others, but he was the chief drafter, a biblicist to the end, Stephen Langton, gave us our chapter divisions in our Bible as well, in our Bibles we still use today. And he talked about the lex terra, the law of the land, and due process of law. Those are the same thing. Again, I'm in good company when I say these things. He who never quotes is never quoted. He who never quotes is never quoted. That's my favorite quote. And I'm in good company. The Supreme Court of the United States has said it on more than one occasion. Due process is our common law. Lex terra, the law of the land, is another phrase for what? Due process. That's what the conclusion is. To understand those phrases of our Constitution is to understand that our Constitution freights at every point the principles, the processes of our common law. It is a course we get on. And it's compatible in that way, consonant with the statements of the Bible from cover to cover and lid to lid. The laws of nature's God is our common law. There's another phrase. Our Declaration of 76 says the laws of nature's God, and then it says, and then it, before that it says the laws of nature, I got them backwards, Roger, the laws of nature and of nature's God. The first phrase, the laws of nature, that phrase means our common law. This unwritten, by the way, because it's something we observe in the nature of creation. Number two, the laws of nature's God. What's that phrase mean? That means the Bible. And I'm getting good company on that. Again, quoting William Blackstone in his first volume of his commentaries on the laws of England. 11 years before our Declaration of 76, in his lectures, he identified the meanings of those terms as they were used in common parlance in that day. So what is our fundamental law as Americans? What is it? It is the laws of nature, our common law, the way we do things, the how, not the what, but the how, and then the laws of nature's God, the Bible. You see, men, us, God has not given us jurisdiction to declare the outcome standard of human behavior. He has given us jurisdiction to adhere to fair play. Fair play, that's due process. Notice, for example, and an opportunity to be heard, always allowing for trial by jury in criminal and non-criminal cases. That's our common law. Grand jury indictment, that's our common law. It's our jurisdiction as men to declare that and make sure it's adhered to, but it is not our jurisdiction to declare what is right and wrong in the outcome standards. That's God's jurisdiction. That's why he says in the Bible, in the law of God, in the Old Testament, he says, be not afraid, you judges, you jurors, be not afraid of the face of any man. Just follow the course of our common law. It's a course you get on. He said, and if you follow the course of our common law, the judgment is mine. It's not yours. You don't need to be afraid of anybody. I declare the outcome standard, and the way to reach that outcome standard, thou shalt not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. The way to reach that, and make sure, ensure you reach it, is to follow my courses of process. Here's another one. How many witnesses does it take to establish any material fact in a case? God tells us point blank, two, but never more than three. Two, but never more than three. And every good trial lawyer, if he's experienced, he'll tell you, two witnesses is, one witness is not enough, two is good, three is okay, and more than three will probably hurt you. Well, that's what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't even allow more than three. Jesus Christ said to the woman caught in the act, the Pharisees caught her in the act of adultery. John chapter Well, it goes into chapter 8, starts the last verse of chapter 7. Caught her in the act. And the Pharisees threw her down on the ground in front of him and said, what do you think we ought to do with this whore? What should we do with it? And he said, well, let's talk about this a minute. Which one, of course, he squatted down on the ground and wrote on the ground. It doesn't say what he wrote. We don't know, but I have a good idea. But then he said, which one of you is without sin? Without lawlessness, in other words. And they didn't answer him and began to walk out. You see, here's what had happened, and there are statutes in our states that address this, North Carolina, I believe, being one of them. Is it possible to convict somebody of adultery? In other words, somebody confesses to adultery. By the way, in a lot of states, adultery is still a serious crime, even though it's not prosecuted very often. Minnesota, Illinois, places like that. But is it possible to convict somebody of adultery? There's two witnesses to the act, even if they're by themselves, right? There's the woman and the man. Or there's sodomizing.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, but you got this sexual act. What if the woman confesses to it? Or let's say better. What if the man that commits adultery with her testifies that she's an adulteress? And that's what it appears clearly is happening in that case. Is that enough to convict her? What did Jesus Christ say? He said, no, the law of Moses says there has to be two witnesses, and of those two witnesses, the two witnesses are the ones that have to initiate the execution. They have to start throwing the rocks.
Ooh.
And none of them would throw the rocks. Of course, knowing that there were people behind them, what you have to think this through. When you think of the law of God, how perfect it is. If execution is by stoning, and somebody is a witness, and they're supposed to start the execution, and they won't do it, and they wouldn't do it in this case of this woman, well, she's free to go. There isn't evidence against her, even if she admits to it. It's got to be two witnesses. This is big stuff to understand testimony and witnesses, and all evidence is ultimately oral. All of it has to be in the end. And God does a good job of going to great pains of being very precise about such matters. Now, that's due process, Roger. That's an example, I suppose, of what I'm talking about. When I talk about our common law, I'm not talking about, and our Constitution does not talk about, family law, tort law, contract law. Oh, it mentions it, but it doesn't provide any standards. Why not? Well, because that's not what our common law is about. Our common law is about process, and our Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government as to be applied to the operations, the how government is to operate, the government, the general government in Washington, D.C., for instance. One more example, and I'll take a breather. People shouldn't be upset at all that Donald Trump is not president. That shouldn't be what drives them. What should drive them is the common law wasn't followed. Well, what's the common law? Well, that's the process that should be followed when we elect a president. And the Constitution of the United States lays out that common law procedure.
Very clearly.
That's what we should be, and we are. Many people are. I'm just saying some people are just mad because they didn't get their man in. Well, that's not the point. You know, there are no good men to put into office. That's silly to even think such a thing. What's important? Important is if somebody's going to be convicted of a crime or somebody's going to be elected to president of the United States or chosen by the procedures, we must follow the procedures. They're there to ensure a just and fair result. We even say as common lawyers in America, it's a common saying, no due process, no reliable result. And that what God said in the Bible, in the law of God, he said, to be not afraid of the face of any man, just follow the process, and the judgment is mine. And the result is reliable. When I never go into court and holler about, this is a no, man, where I can say, hey, wait a minute, we're not following proper process here. This is not fair. And if it's not fair, we can't rely on the result. And that's really all lawyers that are in America, in a common law country, and there's so few of them, just a handful, we're one of them. Fundamentally, the English-speaking world and the colonies of Britain at this point. That's our job, and that's everybody's job. And we are awash. We are a common law country. It's the second greatest blessing we have. According to William Franklin Fratcher, I agree with him, William Franklin Fratcher was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. And the first thing they had to decide at Nuremberg, here I am. I just keep talking on. Roger, is that okay?
So you're in a real strong spot. You're in a real strong spot, so why don't you hear that? But I'm really glad you brought up this story because you're the only person I've ever heard that knows this. Okay, and we hear Nuremberg being thrown around every other second these days because of what's going on, and this is so fundamental and so important, and you know it because this guy happened to be one of your professors in law school, if I remember correctly. Okay, Brent.
Yeah, Roger, listen. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Roger.
Yes, we're here.
Yeah. No, are you there?
Well, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm trying to get in the right spot. Yeah, I can hear you. I was wondering, you said there was going to be a break. Should we take a break?
Well, I think Sam's so enamored with your oratory that we rolled through them, which they have the prerogative to do. I didn't ask him to do that, but I appreciate it if that's the case. Because, you know, the breaks, as necessary as they are, interrupt people's train of thought for 2 or 3 minutes, even us, and it's hard to get right back on track when you get back. So I appreciate, like we do on our daily show, not having any interruptions, because as the audience is very well aware, this is real complex stuff we're talking about, usually, and it's extremely important. I mean, I can't stress the importance of what you're hearing tonight.
I can't think of anything more important either, Roger, because the most important thing in life, there's two things that last forever in this thing we call human existence. Only two. The first one is people. According to what God tells us clearly, men and women last forever, either in eternal torment or they last forever in eternal bliss. And the other thing that lasts forever is the revelation, God's laying bare of his will to his people. His will, the will, he's the sovereign, and the will of the sovereign among all people is always the same. It's law. You may have a false sovereign, but the will of the sovereign is law, and this book we call the Bible is God's revelation, his laying bare of what he wants us to know about what he wants.
You know, Brent, I'm going to interrupt you for a second because something has come to my mind twice, so I'm going to interrupt you. Back in the old days when I was in Atlanta, we had a very good active patriot group there, and because of that, all of the gurus, what I call them, would come to town because they had an audience, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch called the Rommel School of Law. Now, I'm sure numerous people in the audience and probably yourself are familiar with those guys, right? Mike Brown and those guys?
I've met him, and years ago I went to one of his sessions because I wanted to know what it was. Go ahead.
Right. Well, the guy that usually fronted around the country wasn't Mike. It was a guy named Peter. And Peter'd get up in front of that room to start the whole weekend off, and he'd hold the Bible in his left hand with his left hand underneath the bottom. And everybody's watching him. Everybody's quiet, you know. And he'd take his right hand and swing it just about as hard as he could and hit the top part of that Bible, and it'd give a big boom noise, you know. And he'd say, "This is a law book." Mm-hmm. That's the way they'd start.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it's true. The Bible is a collection of writings of legal significance. That's what law, when it's law is recorded in writing, lawyers, or common lawyers in America, often refer to it as a writing of legal significance, but it's not really a writing, it is the collection of writing of legal significance.
We got a break. All right, hold that, the collection, because Sam's going to hit us with a break, and we're going to pick that right up on the other side. See y'all in a minute. If you go away, shame on you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Inflation reduction spending? I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Inflation reduction spending package currently being suggested by Congress may be the most idiotic thing I've ever seen Congress try. And that's saying a lot. Inflation is when money becomes worth less. Money becomes worth less when there is too much money in the market. A spending bill, any spending bill, that puts more money in the market will only make inflation worse. Couple that with raising taxes and you get complete economic collapse. The proposed 15% minimum corporate tax will be passed along to you and me, the consumers. It is an obvious fact that only consumers pay taxes. So, government spending makes inflation worse, and higher taxes take even more of what's left. It honestly looks like our government wants us to just be too poor to survive. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W, 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Five seconds, Sam. See if we can't pipe that down and get back to the business at hand. Roger Sales with you and my co-host, broadcast partner, and friend, Brent Winters. And Brent is waxing on, as he's prone to do when you wind him up. He's kind of like the ever-ready battery, Brent. But before we get you unleashed again, let me just say a couple of things for the audience so you'll understand here. And we were talking about this week on my show when we started. We've just been doing these Friday shows for, well, so many years you lost count. And so I got, we used to say about 7 years, and I got thinking about it the other day and the circumstances that brought us together. And we figure it's more like 9 years. And I don't think there's very many Fridays in those 9 years. The only time that we've ever missed one was when you had a court conflict, and then we moved it to Thursday instead of Friday, or when Friday falls Christmas and New Year's. I think those are the only shows we've missed, man, except when I, you know, was in the hospital for a couple of days there, and in a long time. One of the things I really appreciate about Brent, you know, you're talking about less and less earlier, is you and I have both done that, okay? And what happens when you get down to that level of the minutia and you get that information in your brain is your subconscious starts giving you answers that you don't even ask the question for. Okay. I've had that happen several times, but one of the things I really appreciate about Brent is his ability to take complex things and break them down into simple, understandable statements. That's a talent, Brent. I've got it too. You've got it. Okay. And for the audience's sake, I wish you'd kind of, I know we left off in the break. Thank you, Sam, for giving us the extra time and less interruptions. And, but I would like for you to go into the, it's always good sometimes to describe something by the opposite, okay? And you have taken and given me a great understanding into breaking down these things we call bodies of law down to suit two simple options. And I wish you'd go into that with the audience so they understand too. Because, again, I can't tell y'all. You're getting into this stuff. You like it. You're interested. You want to be free. I cannot tell you how important these basics are. I can't stress it enough, and I'm not kidding, okay? When you know the basics, I think you said this one time, Brent, when you know the basics, anything is simple.
And everything's simple once you understand it, once you know the basics. And I'm in good company. Vince Lombardi said that about football itself.
Yep.
It's a crew of everything. I had a fellow one time when I was young and a lot crazier than I am now. And, back when boys used to build hot rods, and my buddy took apart a automatic transmission, laid it out on a piece of cardboard and fixed it and rebuilt it and put it back together. And then he came to me and he said, it's not that complicated once you tear it apart and look at it, an automatic transmission. And I said, yeah, Terry, everything's simple once you understand it. And I didn't know how important that statement was. I don't know who told it to me, but that's pretty near 50 years ago I said that. Every time I talk to him, we still stay in touch. He's a genuine hillbilly from near Bedford, Virginia. And he said, Brent, I never forgot. It changed my life when you said that. I said, well, he said, how did you figure that? And I said, I didn't, Terry. I said, I'm just quoting somebody else. And that's why I say he who never quotes is never quoted. But if you quote other people that know more than you, people start quoting you as though you're the one that said it. It's not true. But always give credit when you quote people. I try to. Now, Roger, you'd made a request, and I'm happy to abide by that request to show the difference in how simple this is between the law of the land and the law of the city. But to do that, I'm going to tell a story, because as you know, stories sell, facts tell, but stories sell. So this is the story that you'd ask about a while ago, because I've told this before, and you're familiar with it. But,
oh, yes. And super important, kids. You get your ears perked up right here.
William Franklin Fratcher. Well, William F. Fratcher was a prosecutor at Nuremberg, and I used to, he's gone now, been gone many years. He was probably in his 30s during the war, when he was a member of the JAG Corps, and he was a member.
Well, you clipped on us there, Brent. JAG Corps was the last I got. Boop, boop. That means we got disconnected. Okay, we'll get Brent back in a second. I'd never heard this previously to Brent mentioning it one day, and I've never heard it subsequently. I don't know if anybody knows it or not, really. But it's real, real insightful information, and we got some technical problems. The way that Brent and I met is kind of interesting. Some of you are familiar with an attorney in our movement named Larry Beecraft. And back when I was at the Micro Effect years ago, Larry Beecraft had a show there on Saturdays. And every Saturday, you back, Brent? Is Brent back? I guess
he'll I'm here.
Okay. Well, I was just telling him while we met, while I was tap dancing, while we lost you there. I got this email from Larry Beecraft, and he said, I'm going to have Brent Winters on this Saturday. He's an expert on the common law. Now, that's what Beecraft said about you, okay? And so I thought, well, heck, man, I need to know who this guy is, because my teacher, John Benson, was the only other person I knew that knew anything about it. And my original intent, as Brent knows, was to try and get you and John on a show together, because you two would have been, whew, man. So anyway, that's how we met. We did a show there, and it got into a habit of having it on Fridays. Back then it was afternoon drive in that slot for me, and so we would like to cover anything legal and important or anything that came up, and also go to the spiritual roots of this battle we're in and give people something to ruminate on over the weekend. Well, now we're earlier in the day on Friday, but I think that's still our theme, and here we are all these years later, Brent. And I honestly think, audience, I'm not kidding you, I think Brent and I do a show every week if nobody's listening. We enjoy it so much, each of us.
That's always a good way to put it. Am I being heard, Roger?
Yeah, you're here, bud.
Oh, okay. Well, William Franklin Fratcher was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. I'd go to his office, and he'd get kind of cynical sometimes. And he had an interesting problem. We all have problems, Roger. None of us are perfect. And his problem was... it was curious. His problem was he could pronounce every letter of the English alphabet, every sound of every letter except one, and that was the letter L, as in Lima. He couldn't somehow, his tongue. So as a lawyer, he couldn't say lawyer. He couldn't say law. Now, he would talk about, because he taught legal history, too, which the history of our common law and the history of the law of the city. There are only two possibilities for law. There is the law of the land, and there is the law of the city. There isn't anything else. These are traditions, both of them, of religion, law, and government. Religion, law, and government, and those three things are inseparable in everybody's life and in every country. You cannot separate religion from law, from government from law, religion. They come as a package. You can analyze them separately, but they're like body, soul, and spirit of the man, the tripartite nature of man. You can analyze them separately, learn about them separately, but if you pull them apart, then the other two collapse. They stand and fall together. Here's another trilogy: life, liberty, and property.
Oh yes.
Those stand and fall together. You take one of those away, the other two collapse. They don't have any value anymore. Well, that's why our Declaration of 76 mentions them: life, liberty, and property. That's all you got in this life. You don't have anything else. Life, liberty, and property. And your life is your property, and your liberty is your property, and those are interchangeable ideas to even add further to it, but they are different, but they're inseparable. Inalienable, or unalienable, depending upon what particular prefix, preposition trips your triggers. Both of them are true. Unalienable, inalienable. Well, Fratcher was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. And he said the first question at Nuremberg was, what law are we going to prosecute these Nazis under? Are we going to prosecute these Nazis under the law of Germany, which was the Code of Justinian, which is the civil law, which is the Latin way of saying the law of the city, the law of the Roman Empire? In Germany, they call it the Code of Bismarck, which is nothing more than the Code of Justinian, with Bismarck's name on it, the emperor. In France, they call the Code of Justinian the law of Napoleon, because he took it and put his name on it and said it was his. And then the Roman Church, they call it the canon law, but it's nothing more than the law of the Roman Empire, the Code of Justinian, the emperor, the Roman emperor of the 6th century. They put it to an ecclesiastic purpose. It's an imperial law. The Pope of Rome is the ghost of Rome, said Gibbon, sitting on the grave of Rome, and I add, rightly wielding the law of Rome, the Roman law. Well, that's all of South America, Roger. You and I have talked about that a lot. They're under the Roman law.
Yep.
Here's something else Fratcher said, though. Fratcher said, you show me the fundamental form of government of the religious institute, of the dominant religious institution of a country, and I will show you the fundamental government of that country. Let me say that again. You show me, he said, the fundamental form of government of the dominant religious institutions of a country, and I will show you the fundamental government of that country. And all of South America shows what's their dominant religious point of view, and the government they accept and their religion in their heart of hearts, it is dictatorship. The see and the Pope of Rome. Well, that,
I mean, I've told you before, you know this, Brent, I lived in Argentina for 9 years. It's in the Argentine Constitution that Argentina is a Catholic country. 92% or 93% of the people down there are Catholics. They don't all practice, obviously, but that's the percentage I've read.
Mm-hmm. And they're comfortable with dictatorship. All the South American countries are. They are law of the city, civil law countries. That's in contrast and opposition to our law of the land. When I said a while ago that Stephen Langton drafted Magna Carta in Latin, that was so all of the intelligentsia of the Roman system, the university system, the degrees, the Gnosticism, the secret societies, they could read it. And when the Pope of Rome read it, I'm talking about Magna Carta, he blew a proverbial head gasket, according to the people that were there when he began to read it, that were there as his underlings. Well, of course.
Two witnesses.
Yeah, you only need two. And he immediately, of course, excommunicated Stephen Langton, who happened to be Archbishop of Canterbury, along with anybody else that had anything to do with it. Does that mean anything to us? Are we understand what's going on here? We said this morning, Roger, you and I were on another platform at a different time, but we talked about, and you had said this, I was really quoting you, and you were quoting Pete Peters, I believe, when you, different lawgiver, what's a lawgiver? It's a god. Different lawgiver, different law. Listen, it's either the law of the land or the law of the city. Now, that's the two poles. There are combinations of those two on the continuum between those two poles, but that's the only two options that men have. I was talking to Vieira once. Vieira, the fellow you mentioned a while ago.
Right.
And he had sent me all his books, and I had sent him my books, and he took a rather cavalier attitude toward me, like I was a pissant of some kind, and I really didn't understand reality because he was in the power center, see? Mm. He's a Harvard man, and he's a Romanist, too, by the way.
Kind of sounds like his good friend Larry.
Yeah, well, he's a Romanist. He's a Romanist. I'm just stating facts. I'm not criticizing the guy outside to state the fact of the matter. He's a Romanist. Well, what does that mean? That means he's comfortable with the law of the city in his heart of hearts. And so he looked at me as though, and I'm an advocate of our common law. And he looked at me as though, well, you should take this. I remember he said to me, you should take this stuff to Regent University Law School. As though we're off to the side and us folk that are Christian folk, Protestants, don't really know what's going on. Because we're not at the center of the power base here. We're not followers of Babylonian Judaism. We're not followers of the Pope of Rome. We're not Mormons. We're not seeking. I'm not seeking institutional power, but they are, and they want to be. They want to be connected to that kind of earthly law of the city power. But he took a rather cavalier attitude toward me about it. But no, I don't think most lawyers really grasp our common law. I've read his books, and they're good. They're overly detailed. They're hard to understand, I think, and a lot of detail there. He's a Harvard-educated lawyer and a Harvard-educated chemist or engineer or something. I forget what it is, but it's not that the man isn't learned. He's learned. But remember, the law of the city is learned about a lot of details, and that's what the law of the city is about. It's about details. What's the law of the land about? It's about fundamentals. Fundamentals of process. The law of the land is not a list of laws. A list of laws, no. It's a way, W-A-Y, of life. Jesus Christ said, I am the way. I am the way. What does the word Torah in the Old Testament mean, the Hebrew word? Torah is translated law in most cases, but it means much more than that. What does it mean? Well, it's in the verb form in the Old Testament, Torah, Yara. It means the way pointed out with the index finger. The road, the derrick, the roadway, New Testament, odos, Greek, the Greek tongue, the roadway. I am the roadway. I'm the path you get on, the narrow path. The Reformers had it right. John Bunyan wrote a book. It was sold more copies of that book than any book in the world for years, except the Bible. More copies of that book that he wrote more than any book. What was the name of it? Pilgrims,
progress.
It's all about progress. And when Pilgrim, in that book, he finds the wicket gate that lets him in to the to the road he has to get on, the path. And you and I, Roger, have talked about the Yellow Brick Road and why that man wrote that story, Wizard of Oz. The Yellow Brick Road. Well, it was a road that led to a false god. Remember the story? And the guy that wrote it.
It's important to know in the book that Dorothy's slippers were silver. In the movie, they made them red because it was the first or early colorized movie.
Yes, and you'd made that point, too. Of course, silver was a big issue then when he wrote that story back during the days of William Jennings Bryan. But they went to a city called the Emerald City. There's the law of the city, you see. The yellow brick road, you got to get on it. You can't get off of it. You got to stay on it. And when you get there, you find it's a false god and a nothing behind a curtain. That's all it is. Just a big blow. And that's what the law of the city is.
It took a dog to show us all that.
Yeah, it took a dog. Well, this is the way God presents the reality to us, friends. It's heaven or hell, up or down, in or out, saint or ain't. You're either a follower of God's will, his way of doing things, or you're a follower of the law of the city and mere men who claim to be gods. And that's what we have in America. It's the conflict in every country, among every people. This is the conflict. It's the conflict in America today. the law of the land versus the law of the city, and all of the features that go with it. The law of the city, for instance, all of the communist countries of the world are under some form of the Code of Justinian. Oh, and they have been. Almost all the countries of the world are under some form of the Code of Justinian, either the French form, the German form. Vietnam, for instance, is under a French form, the Code Napoleon. Louisiana and Quebec are the only two jurisdictions in North America that are law of the city, civil law jurisdictions. And what are they under? They're under the French Code. The French Code. And their governors, the governor of Louisiana, is an exceedingly powerful position. It's like an emperorship, you see. Of course, the good thing about the folks in Louisiana, Roger, you're going to say something, but let me finish this sentence.
I got a bunch to say.
I know. Yeah, because you went to school in Louisiana, right? You remember.
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, I know you did. But
know who one of my heroes is, of course.
Well, is it the Kingfish or who is it?
The Kingfish.
Yeah, Kingfish. He was a powerful man. He was governor, see? Under the law of the city, it's dictatorship, it's emperorship, it's imperial. There were no jury trials for capital crimes in Louisiana until after 1968, when a case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, now Roger, this is 14th Amendment stuff. He said, wait a minute, this fellow may be a resident of Louisiana, but he's a citizen of the United States under the 14th Amendment. And the Constitution of the United States guarantees to him a trial by jury. You got to give this man a jury trial. They'd never done that in Louisiana.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, it's a good example that shows, can illustrate both those things. But it illustrates Quebec the same way. Why? Because the French had the dominant influence there. And they were primarily Roman Catholic. And Roman, they're not Catholic, they're just Roman. There's nothing Catholic about it. That's an oxymoron to say Roman Catholic. But the French-speaking people, by the way, in Quebec, and the French-speaking people that came to Louisiana are the same bunch. They came from Quebec to Louisiana. Why do they do it? Well, because they were fed up with the common law of England that England and Parliament were foisting upon them. Until the Quebec Act, which was one of the chief fomenters of America's war with Britain to separate. What was the Quebec Act of Parliament? Quebec Act was giving in to Quebec and saying, okay, you can have your canon and civil laws in Quebec. And with that act, it extended the southern boundary of Quebec to the Ohio River. So all of what is now Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, became under the canon and civil laws of Rome. And that took in, see, the southern half of that, well, the southern half of Illinois, Indiana, the southern third of Ohio was Virginia, because it extended clear to the Pacific Ocean, at least to the Mississippi. And Virginia was willing to go to war because their charter said, no, that's all your land. Well, they said, now that belongs to Quebec. And that's why the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 made such a big deal in the preamble about trial by jury in the course of the common law, to make sure it was established there. You see, go ahead.
Which, by the way, for the audience, if you go over to the statutes at large in your law library, that's the set of books over there with all the dust on them because nobody ever opens, and open volume one. You find the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Territory, and the Constitution. You think those aren't law if they're in a law book? Are you nuts?
Mm-hmm. It's all there. Well, Roger, now I see that we're at the end of the hour, and I want to quickly shoot through this story because you asked me to. I started it, and I didn't finish it. Here's what happened.
That's
all right. I went with you. What are we going to prosecute these Nazis under, the law of the land or the law of the city? And they finally decided, if we prosecute them under the law of the city, which is the Code of Justinian, the Code of Bismarck in Germany, if we prosecute them under the law of the city, we won't get any convictions because it's a complete defense to any crime in all the countries of the world, all the city law countries in the world, a complete defense to any crime that you obeyed the government. Except in our common law countries. It's not a defense to do that. And so that's why they used the law of the city, and they prosecuted, and they all argued, well, I obeyed my government, and the fault should be laid at the feet of the political leaders. How can you prosecute me? But they said, no, we're prosecuting you under the law of the city. And thank you, Roger. That's why we're together. And then Winston Churchill said he wanted to invoke a common law doctrine against them, called outlawry. he wanted them declared outlaws. If you're going to use the law of the common law of England, which is just our common law, he said we need to make them outlaws, and we can go after them and bring them in dead or alive. Well, that's what happened at Nuremberg. And even General Marshall of the United States Army, the big high-ranking general officer, when he put out the general order for court-martials against Americans that had committed war crimes during World War II, and some of our boys were accused of that, he said this in his general order to them, courts-martials. He said, obedience to orders can be a mitigating factor when you're deciding whether or not they broke the law, can be a mitigating factor, but obedience to orders can never be the exonerating fact. But what is he upholding there? He's upholding our common law point of view, even for soldiers under a martial law system. Well, Roger, thank you for having me on. I'll let you have the rest of it. Oh, we didn't say, Roger.
No, we got another hour, man.
Oh, okay. I don't need to be in a hurry then, thank you. Well, no, but coming back to the law of the city and the Nazis, Eichmann said on the scaffold, and I'm going to quote Eichmann, when they hung him, he said, I obey the law of my flag and my country, and the fault should be laid at the feet of the political leaders. And then they hung him. But that is a complete defense to crime in the law of the city. Why? Because in the law of the city, there is no appeal from government. Government is de facto, in Germany, government, in Nazi Germany, government was de facto God. There was no appeal from government. And by the way, Japan had adopted the German form of the Roman Code of Justinian. That's why the emperor, you know, in Japan, the emperor, they didn't say he had all these powers. They said he's God. He is God. He's the 142 generations from the heavenly body we call the sun. That's why we call Nipponese. That's what they call themselves, the Japanese, the Yaps. And they had the sun on their flag. That's their God. And this emperor, the Japanese emperor, was the sun, S-O-N, of the S-U-N. The Pharaoh of Egypt was the sun, S-O-N, of the S-U-N. Those are all counterfeits to the true son, S-O-N, of the true lawgiver, Jesus Christ. And by the way, for you folks...
Now, hold that right there, Brent. We've got to take a short break. We'll be back as we turn the top of the hour, I believe. See you in a minute.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the Internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
RBN. John Stadtmiller's Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org.
All right.